Hello everyone, and welcome to the Pep Talks podcast. In this episode, me and Sam are joined by Pearson Ham CEO, Tim Ham. Pearson Ham work collaboratively with PBAC businesses to help them create value through better pricing. We discuss the six steps to pricing implementation, which is the title of a report Pearson Ham and Pep Talks collaborated on following market research conducted with 350 private equity-backed CEOs around their own pricing strategies. The report is available for download in the description of this episode. What follows is Tim giving his insights on the finding of the report and taking a deep dive into each of the six steps, ultimately giving you advice on how to run an effective pricing strategy in your own business. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so we're back in Pearson Ham's offices in Soho for our next episode of Map of the Maze. And we're back talking to Tim Ham, founder of Pearson Ham, the pricing specialist. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
So we've been working together for about 3 years now, certainly around the pandemic and pre-inflation. And last year, working together, we undertook a piece of research really to try and understand how the inflationary market had changed the way in which private equity backed businesses, portfolio companies, were facing into the challenges of price increases and facing into the challenges of cost increases in their own businesses. Because everyone went through a process of looking at their pricing and increasing pricing last year. So we went through a process of really trying to reach out to our membership and the broader market through both our businesses to understand what the market looked like, and collected a huge amount of data and then produced a six-step guide, really, in conjunction with Tim and Pearson Ham. But I have Richard here, my producer and co-host, and he's going to tell us a bit more about the process of capturing that data. How many people did we go to? What did we ask them to do?
So we went out to a lot of people. We got back about 350 responses from PE-backed CEOs. And yeah, essentially just surveyed them, asking them what their current approach is to pricing, what they were currently doing, what they were planning to do, how they were interacting with their team around pricing. So we got all that those results back, and then in collaboration with Pearson Ham, analysed them and produced a guide called Six Steps to Pricing Implementation, a Guide to Effective Pricing Strategy in Uncertain Market Conditions, which has been really popular. We've sent out to all of our membership and more. We've had loads of great feedback from it. I'm going to include a link to the guide in the description for the podcast. If you want to read that, please do. And yeah, I guess today we're here to just expand on that guide a bit more with Tim and talk specifically about the results. But I guess first of all, I'd like to ask, What was the impetus to this guide? Why did we think this was the appropriate time to do this research?
Well, I think we were in a very dynamic situation, weren't we? Of course, things are still changing, but at that point in time, it was very high inflation. It was changing very rapidly. And it was interesting to find out how businesses were dealing with that.
Yeah.
And the perspective of where businesses were with their pricing agenda was no longer valid, so getting up to speed on that transition was helpful.
And I think probably in our work that we've done around the pandemic, pre-inflation, we sort of felt that pricing was a bit of a sort of forgotten lever sometimes for portfolio companies, and suddenly it was like the obvious lever that everyone needed to pull. And I guess we wanted to try and really understand, are people pulling that, are chief execs and management teams pulling that in the most effective way? Are they getting what they should be aiming to get out of their price increases? Mm.
Just before we jump into the actual results of the survey, just interesting to know, so we collected all the responses in the first quarter of 2023. Would you say the landscape has changed since then?
Yes, I think most significantly, a year ago, yes, there was very high inflation, but we were not quite at the peak, and there was a question about what lay ahead, and there was a sense of the fact that in the past we'd underestimated these things, and our view of the future was a current view, but that could be wrong. So there was a big sort of unknown perspective then. Now we're in the situation where, of course, inflation has come down significantly. Mm. It's about half of what it was a year ago, a little bit less. And there is the expectation it will go down from here. The question is more about the speed at which that happens. So a year ago, you were putting through a price increase or a price change where people recognize that that was absolutely right. But now it's a situation where it's more difficult and people have to think more carefully about it.
So should we start taking a look at some of the actual results we got from the survey? So 86% of our respondents implemented a price increase. And I think the interesting thing here that we found was that those with a 20-30% increase experienced lower churn than those with an 11-20% increase. Why do you think that could be?
I think it demonstrates that most people have, through an understanding of their product and their customers and the competition, intrinsically a rough understanding of how price sensitive their customers are, or at least the companies who have got the lowest price elasticities, they understand that and they put through bigger increases and they were able to achieve that. That said, these decisions were made based upon intuition and judgment, and very few people did market research. You know, they didn't have the speed and the time to do it.
So that's interesting. What were some of the other key findings? What else did we find out in terms of who owns pricing strategy and, you know, how they were implementing it across their businesses?
Well, at this point in time, we saw the CEOs and the senior members of the organization getting more involved in pricing. And that's understandable, of course. You know, it's a big imperative. It's necessary to make sure you deliver sufficient profits. And so whilst sometimes in the past pricing was seen as a more tactical, lower decision, these people kind of stepped in. We also saw that pricing was considered sort of too independently of product packaging, and we always see that. In fact, those people who delivered price changes well were those who not only talked about inflation or issues around cost, but were also able to talk about customer value and what they were doing with their product. And if you can do the two in parallel and make the conversation broader than just price and cost, then that's much better. And it sets you up for the future too, because what you don't want to do is get all of your customers onto the drug of, I only increase price because of inflation. Because when inflation drops off, that then is problematic.
Yeah, and I guess it's really fair to say that product bundling and integrating pricing around product development is a much harder thing to do, isn't it? As somebody who has multiple products in our business, thinking about how we package those together and price them to the maximum benefit of our customer as well as to ourselves, that feels like a much harder challenge than saying, okay, let's try and increase our prices in line with inflation.
And it's more relevant in some sectors than others. So if you're a software provider, you probably are making significant changes to your product. If you're the provider of some kind of commoditized product, that there isn't so much scope to do product development, then it's obviously much more problematic.
Yeah. So those are some of the sort of key takeaways that we took from our research, and there's much more detail in the Six Steps report that Richard has mentioned. But let's get into some of those some of the detail around each of those six steps, Tim. That's, if you're advising pep talks really about becoming excellent at price changes and price implementation as a process, where do we start? What's step number one?
Perhaps unsurprisingly, it's about the objectives. We generally see that people are under-ambitious with objectives. They don't have a sense of what they could achieve, and they don't expose it, because often the objectives are about hitting the budget or covering a cost increase.
Yeah.
When in fact they should be asking themselves questions about, like, you know, what can I possibly do? What can I achieve from my price increases? And the senior levels should be saying, well, I want to deliver for sake of argument, an improvement of margins from 8% to 13%. This year. Tell me how you can do that through pricing. Mm. And of course, the team can then come back and say that's impossible because, And you can listen to the rationale and establish what you really think you should do. But it's very, very difficult to get the team to do the right thing if you say, we've got to deliver a 2% price increase to reflect our costs. They're not going to come back with more imaginative responses and expose to you all of the opportunities. So the starting point is be ambitious with your objectives, give people scope to consider alternatives. But it's also think beyond the pure margin element. You know, pricing's really important from a margin and volume perspective. That's what we think about first and foremost. But it's also important about your positioning in a marketplace. It's also important because it affects your competition and what they do. And we often underestimate that. Mm. But so you should think about that when you're setting objectives around pricing. Think about how you want to affect that position, how you want the market to play out as a result of your price changes.
And should you think about it, should we think about it on a short-term basis, so this year, next 12 to 18 months, or should we be thinking about a pricing strategy over the course of the investment period, for example, you know, in line, you know, in pep talks, example, in line perhaps with new product development and new product releases. So as we develop a new product, you know, what impact do we want that product to have on pricing across our bundle products, for example?
Well, I mean, you're kind of leading the witness a little bit here, Sam, but I mean, we see for a number of businesses, particularly in business services and software and where you've got a genuine product development pipeline, the starting point should be, how am I going to increase the value that I create for my customers? And there's a product development part of that, but there's also, how am I then going to capture that value for myself as well?
Yeah.
And we see this working well when you don't think in terms of, well, what's my product and now how am I pricing it? But you think about, how am I creating value and how am I capturing it? And it pushes those two subjects together. And for that reason, often pricing should be very closely aligned and working very closely with product. It varies by organization. Mm.
Who's responsible for setting the objectives? In the guide, it mentions setting up a pricing committee. Be interesting to hear a bit more about how that works.
Yes, I mean, I would say the CEO is probably the person who should be thinking about setting the objectives, and they might want to take advice from members of the board, but I would be very, very careful about devolving the responsibility to the pricing team or certainly anyone in sales to start the process of saying this is what the objective should be for price in the coming year. I think it's good to have some creative tension within the organization. And as I mentioned, you know, it's far easier to start with ambition and to come back from it than the other way around. So I think it's great if the CEO is ambitious and setting some great targets.
Sure. It's just so easy to get caught in the trap of cracking on and getting on with a project, whether it's pricing, operational sort of cost enhancement, hiring, my whole game, you know, recruitment, that's just go out and find a new executive director, but actually scoping the project and really trying to understand the full value you can realise is just so important. And I suppose, you know, the critical piece of advice is, you know, invest some real time in that, invest some real thought, explore, seek out some expertise, so you're scoping that project from the outset in the right way to extract maximum value.
Yes, I think it actually leads us into step two, which is around understanding your insights, because you've got this juxtaposition between, I'm going to be very ambitious with my objectives, and building insights, which is about the customer and competitor, are broadly constraints for the problem. So if I understand price elasticities, if I understand how the competitor is going to react, then that tells me the realms of what is possible and what is not possible. And I think the challenge we often see is that people don't properly understand the customer. They often overestimate the price elasticity. So what happens is they start with an under-ambitious target around what they can do with price, and their sort of tacit perspectives, which are not underpinned by robust market insights, just reconfirm that objective. So sort of step two is, I now need to build robust insights. And that can be a combination of doing market research or looking at previous price moves or doing some kind of price testing, which obviously takes longer. And then that feeds into the next steps, which are around assessing those alternatives. But if you don't build those insights at that stage and they're not robust, you will make the wrong decisions in the next stage.
So let's give some indicators on how we go out and research our customers. How do we, what's the best approach to do that? Is it a third party and customer calls and data collection and extraction from your customer base? I mean, how?
It varies by market. So sometimes you've got a very large number of consumers with a relatively small purchase.
Yeah.
And very often in that situation, quantitative market research is appropriate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got less customers and it's a more involved buying process, and then qualitative market research is more appropriate. Qualitative research is really great for understanding people's attitudes and how they go through the process of buying. Quantitative research is better for calibrating, for deriving sort of numbers around price elasticity, for essentially kind of following on very often from qualitative research where you've got a sort of broader understanding.
Yeah.
So it goes past the question of just how much more would you be willing to pay? So I assume you don't really get honest answers to those.
Quite right, yes. Good research tackles the problem from various perspectives. It understands the buying process, pricing knowledge, mm-hmm. pricing attitudes. You do try and get to the subject of what's that relationship between price and volume, and things like conjoint analysis and other research methods are used. But even those, you know, can have a tendency to overestimate price elasticity. So sometimes we have customers where we have both empirical data about their behaviors based upon historical transactions, and we do research, and we typically see the research will overstate price elasticity by about 70%.
Okay.
And that's why the triangulation of this is what we've measured, along with this is our understanding of the buying process and these other elements, are important.
Sure. Okay, so you've gone out, you've done your research. What's next step once you've gathered all that information?
So a part of it's about the customer, mm-hmm. another part of it is about the competitor.
Okay. Sure.
And sometimes the competitor can be ignored or neglected, because the challenge often is you've got lots of information about the customer and your attention and focus is naturally around analysing what you've got. And the competitor is much more difficult to predict. And so that can result in people saying, well, just throwing their hands up and not thinking about it and just not engaging with that subject. But in most markets, we find the competitor's reaction is actually probably more important than the customer's reaction. So we advocate that sometimes you can collect quite a lot of competitive insight. And interestingly, when you do customer research, that can be a way of doing it, mm-hmm. because you can ask customers about the competitors, who else they considered and how their prices varied and stuff, and build up insights around that. But sometimes building up insights around competitors is about getting people together internally, mm-hmm. And sharing what perspectives and knowledge they have in a structured manner, but also running wargaming workshops of, if we were to do this, what position would that put them in? How would they respond? What would we then do?
Have you got any examples of the value that perhaps that you've created in working with customers or you're working with your clients when it comes to that approach of really thinking about the reaction not only of your customers but your competitors?
Yeah, it's more useful when you've got less competitors. So you may, in some markets, say, if we think about motor insurance, you're on price comparison websites, and if you go online tomorrow, you'll get 70 prices. And if I change my prices, yes, it affects the market a little bit, but not dramatically.
Yeah.
Compare that to, you're a ferry operator and you're one of two or three players operating on that route. Actually, the impact of you changing your prices is much more significant. on the competitors. So we will see the greater value in those markets where you've got greater competitive concentration.
Okay.
And actually where the value we often see is people have got that sort of knowledge, but the process of going from step one, where you talk about how you might vary your price, how they might respond, and what you might do, and then you map that out in four or five different scenarios, there's actually quite a lot of thinking there.
Yeah.
And unless you go through the discipline of getting the experts into a room and going through those alternatives and those steps, you haven't really articulated it and got your heads around it, and therefore being able to work out the consequences.
Yeah. So the first three steps really are about preparation, really, aren't they? So defining your objective, doing the research, capturing the insights, and then really thinking about price setting across your different customer groups and the impact on your competitors. Step number four we refer to as deliver a complete campaign. What do we mean by that?
I think there's one thing we haven't yet covered on price setting, actually, if I may.
Okay.
And that's just scenario modelling. So go back to the CEO said, I want to increase prices by, say, for sake of argument, 10%, and set that challenge. That may or may not be the right number. And what we often see is that people have a budget target of 4% or whatever, and the pricing department will work very hard to deliver that, and then go back to the board and go, there we go, 4%, this is what it'll do. Mm. Actually, this is a really important decision that the board are making, and you should be serving up alternatives of, we can do 4 or 7 or 10, this is what it'll do in terms of margin, this is what it'll do in terms of volume, this is how the competitors will respond, this is what we're worried about from a consumer point of view. You make the decision, because it's from a value impact point of view, it's probably one of the biggest decisions they should make. And only if you offer the board up the alternatives are you empowering them to really make the decision, rather than a binary of, will I do that or will I not?
Yeah, got it.
And it sometimes frustrates me, actually, that that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because you think the pricing department are not doing their job. They're not allowing the board to make the big decision. They are actually making it for them.
Yeah. So step number four, everything we've done so far is scoping, analysis, data collection, thinking about impacts on customers and competitors. Step number four we refer to as deliver a complete campaign. What are we talking about here? Is it more of the same, or we're really talking about more detail, aren't we?
I think it's you're going to be careful about declaring victory too quickly and recognize it. Kind of got an organizational infrastructure that needs to work well. Mm-hmm. But there's also a segmentation piece. And we see in a context where you're looking to increase prices, the two key dimensions that are really important to think through that affect how you then deal with it. One of them is, how much is this pricing change going to impact this customer or group of customers? And it often does it on a differential basis. And the second is, how important is this customer? How big is this customer to me? In a B2B situation, that can be quite polarized.
Yeah.
And if I understand those two dimensions, you very quickly see that the amount of energy and time and the way that you deal with the price change should vary by kind of group of customers. So you've got quite a lot to play with still at that point. You know, you've got, first of all, the channel I communicate the price change through. Do I send out an email to simply inform somebody, or do I recognize that they're a really important client to me and warm them up a couple of months in advance, go out and see them, wine and dine them, talk about my company and what's going on and explain what's going on? You know, those are two extremes, and there's a lot that goes between the two. But there's a channel element, but there's also a product element of, do I give them some kind of product enhancements? There's a communication of the message. You know, what is the justification? There's a discount question you've got. And then there's the speed at which this comes in. Is it step change tomorrow, or do I blend it over a period of time? So those variables you land differently depending upon the customer segment.
Yeah. And we'll work, this is a sort of multidiscipline group now within the business that's really working on this, yeah, this end of the projects and the program. So you've planned everything out. You've really thought about everything in terms of comms and impacts, approaches, who's doing what across sales and marketing, for example. What's step number five? We refer to it as piloting.
Yeah, so to your point, you've got lots of groups, but at this point, the most important group is the sales team. They're the ones who are at the cutting edge and will have to land the change. They're also the ones that have to believe in it, and they're also the ones that will make the difference, therefore, between success and failure.
Yeah.
And I think one of the really interesting things about the survey is that we saw that people had really upscaled their thinking in the leadership team of, you know, we're now going to engage more on pricing. What we didn't see was a commensurate increase in the investment in the sales team and equipping them to make the change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And often people look at sales team and see them as being the sort of negative and defeatist ones, which is fine, but you've actually got to work with them and say, well, what perspective are they coming from? Why? How do I need to help them? How do I need to make it in their interests and their capabilities to deliver the change I want to make? And that requires some effort. It requires time with them and training and communications. And if you can, you're best off doing it through piloting, because the changes you've planned out as carefully as you possibly can will not be perfect. Mm-hmm. And there will still be some things to learn. And if you can pilot, then you can work with a few of them really closely. And, you know, and that's the best way of you upskilling them, but also for you to try it in the market, learn the lessons. But most importantly, the biggest benefit of piloting is, having then got that right, you've got a bunch of advocates within the sales team who believe in it and who will be the most persuasive, but also will give the greatest confidence to other members of the sales team.
Yeah.
How do you pick your group for piloting?
Great question. You definitely want to have some of your more able salespeople, mm-hmm. but they might also be the people who are the most vocal, and they might be the people who are most challenging of the price change you're looking sure. to put through. The two can go together, actually. So if you can find those people who are vocal but able and win them over, they're the people who the other sales team members will listen to.
Sure.
Where do you start with? What sort of customers do you start with when it comes to piloting? The ones you're closest to, the most valuable, the least valuable?
Well, you see, arguably you want to do it with a typical group of customers, because the point of it is, albeit you may want to be okay to have a bias internally with the sales team, the point of it is to prove that this works in the marketplace. And what you don't want to do, therefore, is have too much of a bias
yeah.
within them.
And will you, in terms of the pilot, you'll go from start to finish. It will be a complete campaign with that group of customers, that one or three or four, or however many you're piloting with. It's the full campaign.
Typically, yes, because actually it's not so long. I'm going to start communicating about the change. I'm going to talk to you about it, and I'm going to then agree what's happening. And so, it does delay things. And for a lot of people, they don't have the luxury of piloting. And in the last couple of years, often people said, we can't pilot because we've got to get this 10% price change through, and we've got to get it through fast.
Yeah. But in those situations, you can massively misjudge the market, can't you? So I guess this approach captures any mistakes you may have made, any bias you might have in terms of approach or customer or competitor.
Yeah, and I guess, and my bias here is probably the perspective that generally the plans are roughly right, because you've gone through a pretty robust process to get to this point. But the bigger objective is to help the sales team.
Yeah. And once they're on board with it, you're probably away, aren't you? Once you've got those strong advocates, it's about comms to the wider sales team, best practice, training. This is how we get this stuff done, but it's worked. Here are the examples. Here are the pilots.
Yeah, and it's good execution, and it's got to be a great campaign. You don't want to declare victory too soon. You want to make sure that actually people are pushing through the price changes that they're supposed to. You've got to keep an eye on it. You've got to keep an eye on discounts and make sure that what's not happening is that whilst prices are being increased, it's then leaking away through greater discounts simultaneously. So in many ways, you've done the difficult bits, but you can't declare victory because you've got to watch that last bit and make sure you're all over it and managing it so that people do what you're expecting.
Yeah, well, that's point number six, isn't it? Rollout and monitoring. It's just having that dashboard, understanding where you are, what's working, what's not working. But is there anything to expand there in the rollout phase? Expand on in the rollout phase?
Yeah, you're naturally going to get lots of focus around pricing when you've got a price change to make, which is great, but you want to avoid then putting the whole subject of pricing down for 6 months or whatever before you then pick it up to do the next price change. I think we see it invariably is the whole subject of pricing is underrepresented within the leadership team agenda, and that's more often than not because the value that ascribed to it or the value that exists is not properly understood because people don't have the insights. So we're very strong advocates that you should have an ongoing pricing agenda, and that pricing agenda should partly be about the changes you're going to make but also about the insights you need, and you should have the senior team talking about it on a regular basis, and you should at least have not necessarily the whole of the board but number of senior members of the team having a monthly conversation about price. And part of that will be how it's going and looking at metrics, but part of it's also about the development agenda.
Mm-hmm. Should it be in the board pack?
Yes.
And reviewed when necessary, I suppose. It doesn't need to be reviewed at every board meeting, but it should be there. It should be an indicator. It should be a result, shouldn't it? It should be.
And I think sometimes boards will struggle to talk about it on a monthly basis, but this is a sort of vicious circle that they get into. And we sometimes see when we talk to private equity companies, the owners, they say, these portfolio companies, they're just not focused on pricing enough. And we advise them to ask some difficult questions to try and ignite the subject of pricing within the board. And those questions are things like, how do you know a 7% price increase is the right increase? How elastic are your customers? How do you know that? And very often the responses will come back that they don't really know it, but the sales team tell us X. Yeah, and therein lies the challenge. They haven't built the proper, robust customer insights, and they're beholden to the internal perspective of a bunch of people who believe in what they're saying, they're being honest, but at the same time they're listening to customers who have a bias and will tell them when they're overpriced but not underpriced.
Yeah. I mean, those are our six steps. But I wonder if you could give us an indication or some examples of where a client or a company has adopted these six steps and really made it work for them and what that's meant in terms of margin improvement, EBITDA improvement, and then their continued approach to pricing moving forward.
I guess I'd make two points on this. One is, you know, we say to companies that we see that, you know, the difference between doing this in a very basic way and a more sophisticated way, you know, where you're investing time and energy into it and really understanding customers, etc., is about 2-5% improvement in margin. And by that I mean 2-5% of revenue. So if, for sake of argument, you were making a 10% margin net, the impact of doing this takes you to 12 or 15%. So, you know, that's a 20-50% improvement. Brilliant. In profits.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds too good to be true, but it, you know, that's the reality of what we see, and it reflects that people neglect the subject of pricing and just don't do it well enough.
Yeah.
So that's sort of as a sort of generalization. And of course, that varies enormously by market. You know, we see some markets like retail are really, really competitive, and pricing functions often are pretty sophisticated, and therefore the scope for them is much less. But we also see plenty of examples where it's significantly more than 5%. So that's one part of it. The other part of it, to your point about when we've made a change, how's it instilled confidence, etc. We had one client where they went through a regulatory change, and that meant that a big part of their revenues were going to zero overnight. They just couldn't charge that group of people anymore. And that was understood by their customer base. And they put through an increase with our help around 20-25%, which incidentally was a lot more than they were planning to do before we got involved with them and did the research and tested out these alternatives. Yeah. But the process we went through, the skills and capabilities that were built, and most importantly, the market insights that were derived from the research that really helped them understand that actually price wasn't the most important thing, it was the fourth most important thing to customers, gave them a lot more capabilities, but also confidence that this is a lever that they understood and could apply. And nobody did anything cavalier. It was about being more sophisticated, understanding things better, and taking action on the back of it.
Yeah. I'm going to quote one of our honorary members. It's definitely not my wisdom, but he was a huge pricing advocate, you know, for the power of pulling the pricing lever really effectively. And he sort of said, I remember him saying it over dinner, there's only three ways that you can make money or make more money. Way number one, sell more stuff. Way number two, reduce your cost base. Way number three is improve your pricing. And his point really was, there's only so much you can do around your cost base. You can take some margin out. You can improve your margin there, but only to a certain extent. We're talking about high growth businesses that need an operational platform that can deliver three times as much revenue. So there's only so much you can do. Sales, there's an awful lot you can do. And everybody, you know, anyone that's private equity backed should really be looking at how they cross the chasm of the sales bridge from EBITDA of whatever, 5 million, to EBITDA of 10 to 15 in 3 years. Mm. But when it comes to pricing, it's often overlooked. So I think your point is just so firmly made in terms of how much value can be derived from it if you become, as a business, you know, develop your expertise around it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like, why is there such an opportunity around pricing? If there is such an opportunity, why are people not pursuing it and capturing it? Because if you don't have an explanation for that, then you should be suspicious.
Yeah.
And our perspective on this is, generally speaking, it's because people don't understand customers well enough. They overestimate elasticities, and they think they're closer to the optimal point than they are. So it's a bit like the difference between, I've got a spreadsheet where I plan to spend, for sake of argument, £1,000 on this, and I'm now spending £1,200, and the CFO is going to be all over it, and they can see where you've gone wrong, they can see there's a cost overrun, and they'll take action. Probably needs to be more than £200, but the point is there. Versus with pricing, you're underpricing, no one's telling you about it, you don't have sight of it, you're wasting a lot of money, and you have no idea.
Yeah.
And so that's why in 80% of the pieces of work we do, we start with building insights, because that's what exposes the fact that pricing is not an optimal place. And it's so much easier then to get an organization to change or to take action when you've got that understanding.
What's the long-term outlook here to making sure that, you know, you've implemented all of this, but you're continually staying on top of it and making the right decisions going forward?
I think the most important thing is ongoing focus and resources dedicated to the subject. And that has to stem from the top, the CEO, the board being committed to the subject and insisting that this is something that's pursued. And everything else can follow from that. But if you don't have that, it will wane.
Are you getting a sense from your customers, your clients? I'm asking a very large market question. It's a generalization question about how they're thinking about pricing moving forward, having clearly been through a process of the last year, 18 months, where everyone's stuck their prices up. Is there now a shift and change in approach towards pricing post-inflation?
Great question. I think we see a very long-term trend of people focusing more and more on pricing. You know, so it has been neglected as a subject, and more people are realizing that there's more to it than they've pursued. So there's that long-term trend, and the last 24 months have catalyzed that change. And I think there is an element of it's not got the prominence it did a year ago because there isn't the same level of inflation, but there's also an element of it's still has a lot more focus than it did 2 years ago as a result.
Last question, and it's a theme that I'm going to be talking about all the way through the course of this year, which is the impact of AI and the impact of AI on your business in terms of the service that you can provide to your client. You know, you're extracting data, aren't you, everywhere, certainly in that sort of preparation phase. How is AI going to improve your ability to do that or affect your ability to do that?
And this is something that's emerging and we're learning about and we're pursuing and trying to understand. So I don't have a great answer for you, Sam, but what I would say is that AI is better at understanding short-term effects. And one thing that we would suggest people guard against is measuring short-term price elasticities and extrapolating them into the medium and long-term. We see short-term price elasticities typically as being significantly lower than long-term ones, and that's because people have reflection periods. It takes time for people to change habits. It takes time for people to talk to other people. And what we see is that AI should be used. It is a tool. It can build insights, and that has to be done in conjunction with other things. And as is the case with all analysis in pricing, you start by doing analysis, you understand the context for that analysis, what's good and what's bad about it, and then you apply judgment over the top.
Yeah. Okay, great. Perfect. Thank you for your time again, Tim.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
My pleasure. Thank you.